The following presentation was recorded at a Christian Light Education workshop. More information at clp.org.
Good afternoon. This is a session on recommendations for parents or preschoolers. If we are teaching our students, there are also, as a school, we're serving families by helping them with their children in teaching them academic subjects and a variety of other things. There are things that have to happen before children come to school so that they can actually learn what they need to learn in first grade. And there are things that we can help parents with by at least informing them of before they get to the school years. And so what would you tell a parent if the especially parents of a firstborn, the child's 3 years old, and mother wonders, or child's 4 years old, and they say, so what should my child know? She asks the first grade teacher, what should she know, or what should he know? Should I teach her the alphabet? Do you want them to count to 100? What should they know? And are you equipped to tell them, here are some things that the children should be able to do or know, and here are some things that you can do to be sure that those things are in place, the foundational things. As I mentioned this morning briefly, it almost seems, for whatever reason, that in our times now, some of the things that children once did, just almost normally in the growing up process, they no longer do. And it almost seems that we have to give more attention to making sure that these readiness skills are being developed. Here's a handout to a few. And so we'll look at the handout that I gave you. I'm actually going to be rather brief on the first page. The first page is kind of the character kinds of things, the training kinds of things that ought to happen at home. And then the second page is get on more to the specific things related to more to academics. But as my wife pointed out, actually, first thing's ought to be first, and that is obviously first. The discipline is first, and some parents do miss some significant things here. That is, the scriptures say that straight is the way that leads to life, and few there be that find it. And it's also true that in a child's life, there needs to be some straightening. That is, there need to be some boundaries. A child just left to himself to do whatever he wants to do or whatever she wants to do and doesn't have any limits is a frustrated, discontented, oftentimes a restless child. And so here's a handout, you can help yourself. There's a whole aspect of disliking your children. Make sure that their will is trained. Some children have very strong wills, and it's something to watch parents sometimes as they hold a child. The parent, it's a big dad, small child. The dad has a small will, child has a big will, and they're in conflict. And the size of the person, the size of the will in relation to the size of the person sometimes doesn't. And sometimes you wonder, does the parent really understand that this is a contest of wills? And so that's not our major emphasis here. But it is one of the very first things with young children, not crushing the will, but training them away from willfulness to willingness. I'll just highlight a few other things under this. Training your children to obey promptly, to obey, and also number 8, don't depend on explanations to direct their behavior. It seems that more and more you hear parents say, Johnny, don't do this because, or do it this way because. Don't throw your food on the floor because then mommy will have to clean it up. Don't pull the cat's tail because that will hurt the cat. Well, it's all this because, assuming that if the child understands the results of his actions, he won't do it. Well, maybe not. Actually, the fact is that many of us know the results of our actions and we still do it. And so someone might say, don't eat three desserts because it's not best for your health. And we still do things that aren't good for our health sometimes, like get enough exercise. And so what I'm saying is that with younger children, there is a time for giving an explanation, but we can't assume that the explanation will be what keeps them from doing what they shouldn't do or causes them to do what they do. Those same parents who are always saying, no because, oftentimes when the children they get to be then 12, 13, or 14, now they get frustrated, then they start saying, no. And that's the age when you should be ready to explain things to your children and don't depend on the explanations. Does that make any sense? Do you ever see parents with young children say, a two-year-old, no, don't do that because so-and-so, and what's this explanation all about? And I'm not saying that don't explain things, but don't expect that to direct the behavior. Well, I'd like to point out the other areas here because they are important in a child's life. Sometimes the emotional development of the child is more important for first grade work than some of the other areas. Notice number one there, how to handle your feelings. Children are feelers, and that's entirely appropriate. It's good. They are feeling people. And so when they're happy or surprised, they're excited and active, but they can also very quickly go from fears to surprise to anger to impatience. And they need to be trained in such a way that their feelings don't rule them. They need to be able to act in spite of the feelings. Now, we go to bed whether we feel like it or not, if in fact it's time to go to bed. And so when the child comes to first grade, so the child doesn't feel like doing his arithmetic, should he do it anyway? Well, what does feeling have to do with it? So if these things aren't in place by the time the child comes to school, it's very difficult for the teacher to make up for it, the kind of thing I'm talking about here. And along the way, as the children go through life, this is a time to train these things. So the feelings. And then the idea of trying, this is related to it. There are many opportunities as the child grows up for the parent to have the child try something, whether it's trying to eat a new kind of food, or whether it's trying to do a little task, or whether it's touching a kitty for the first time and reaching out, venturing something new. Now, I'm not saying you force them to do things that they're scared of, but you know what I mean. A child, school, by its very nature, almost every day, the child is asked to do something that's potentially frustrating. That's what learning is all about. And if they're not willing to try something that might be difficult, not willing to try something that they might get wrong, they're going to have trouble in almost every aspect of school, whether it's a new game on the playground or saying something out loud, reciting something. So being willing to try. A couple others I'll just comment on. Social development, learning to share, relating to adults. And I'll talk more about play here a bit later. And then moral development. We hope that our parents teach children right and wrong. Let me just point out here that we've all seen children sometime or other who you might have wondered, didn't anybody ever teach you your manners? Do you know what the answer probably is? No, probably nobody taught them. And some children come to school and they might talk back to the teacher. They might talk to the teacher in an imperative voice, move out of the way so I can see the chalkboard. And our first response as a teacher should be that child might not know any better. So the first thing you do is teach them. Maybe nobody ever taught them. And my nephew mentioned that one time he lives in a town somewhere and he found a cell phone lying on the sidewalk. And he was with somebody from the neighborhood, some young fellow. And he was going to try to figure out whose cell phone it was. And this fellow just couldn't figure out why he would do that. And in further conversation, this fellow said to him, you mean if you if you were in my house and saw a $10 bill that you could take without me seeing it, you mean you wouldn't take it? And Ben said, well, of course not. And the fellow said, he just couldn't understand that. He had no category for it. He just thought if you could take something without anybody seeing it, you would do it. And he really, literally could not understand how Ben was thinking. Now, there's an example of somebody who was never trained. It's possible to even have a conscience untrained. And children are not born prepackaged with their consciences trained properly. And so that's an area we would hope that in our circles the children would be trained properly morally. But truthfulness, kindness, gratitude. And then safety skills. Some of these things seem like they would be just obvious that you need to teach children this, but you know we can forget. And even parents who have older children can forget with their younger ones. You might teach your older ones, and then you forget with the younger ones. Some years ago, I was doing some book work one evening, and my daughter, who was, I don't know, 3 years old at the time or four, was playing in the hallway. And suddenly I heard a sound, and the lights dimmed a little bit, and then some of the lights went out, and then she started crying. Now you can guess what happened. She had a bunch of keys that she played with, old keys, and she apparently had numerous times played putting them in keyholes. We have a number of keyholes in our wall that profile off the floor, you know, two keyholes beside each other. And she had been playing with these. Nobody had ever taught her not to do this, neither I nor my wife. And she had apparently done this a number of times. And this time she put two keys in at one time. And providentially, it was, of course, the breaker tripped, some fire flew, made a noise. She wasn't hurt, but obviously she learned fast. But, you know, we can forget. And, you know, it almost seems to be, our society is almost safety, overly safety sensitive. But, you know, we can be the other way. And so you hear about all manner of accidents that plain people have with their children. That is something to remember, to teach your children safety. And then excessive stimulation. We'll bring that one up later. Don't let me forget it. Let's flip on to the next side of the sheet. And the back side. Here is now a list of about a dozen skills. These, if a parent wonders, what does my... Now, the first list is important, don't get me wrong. The emotional maturity, the training and discipline, they're all very vital. But this list now has more to do with the mind or the thinking. And teachers aren't so concerned whether the child can count to 100 or recognize his letters of the alphabet. In fact, some teachers would prefer that you don't teach them the alphabet because they might want to start with the sounds, and if you associate the name of the letter with a letter, that might confuse you. But there are things to be sure they know. Now, as we look down this list, listening, for example, children should be able to follow directions. And as you think of this list, it can serve almost, you might say, as a little, when the doctor gives a physical exam, he has a dozen or so things he checks, the ears and the eyes and the knee jerk and blood pressure and so on. And so you can go down this list and see, can my child do this, 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 this? Most of them you could check off, oh yes, say the child's 5 years, he can do that. But then you might get to one and say, oh, I think maybe there's something missing there, or maybe has not mastered this, and then you can work on it a bit. But following directions. So many of these things, as parents, you don't do them like a schoolroom, you don't do them like a class, but there's plenty of opportunity just in everyday life to do it. And so you can ask your child to do 3 or 4 things. Take out the garbage, empty it, and then rinse it. And then on the way back in, make sure the dog's dish is full. And when you bring it back in, put it here on the table. A child should be able to remember those 4 things, do them all. That's excellent practice, because when a child gets to school, he or she is supposed to be able to do 2 or 3 things. Now take out your books, turn to page 6, take and color the third circle red. And some children can't follow directions. They've never been asked to follow directions at home. You don't have to play school to do that. You just have them do it. A child should be able to listen to stories or poems for 5 or more minutes without interruption. Now, that's just an arbitrary time, but I just had an experience here on Thanksgiving evening. The other day was Thanksgiving, right? We were in Canada on Monday, and some Canadians here. And at Pete's Church, they had a Thanksgiving supper. Then they had a little program in the evening, and there were some visitors from the community there, too. One of the young people read a story to the children. So the children came front, like they do. There's about 15 children. And most of them sat down and listened to the teacher, or this person, read the story. There was one girl there who had no clue. She could not listen. She stood there, and she looked at this child, and all the time the teacher was about as far away from her as that briefcase is to me. The teacher's there reading the story, the rest of the children listening to the teacher, and she looks at this child, and she looks at this one, and then she walked back a little, and she came back up again, and looked at this one and that one. Of course, they didn't pay any attention to her. They didn't engage her. She was not capable of listening to that story being told. Now, imagine if you got a child like that with a class of first graders, which you would do. And some parents, well, I think it should, most parents read to their children. If there's one single thing that you're going to do, that's a great value to your children as far as academically, it's read to them. Read a variety of things. I'll say that again, too. Because when they get to school, one of the first things that's going to happen in first grade is that they're going to be shown a seat and a desk, and we're going to read things to them, and they're going to have things to do, and they have to be able to pay attention. And that's... if... notice at the top of the page here it says, if they enter the classroom without this, he'll have a difficult time because school can't really provide that. And actually, book-related learning results in doing less of many of these activities. Well, moving on, hearing. Do you know that the things children enjoy, the nursery rhymes, the little songs, Hickory Dickory Dock, those songs and sayings and jingles and rhymes, there's something very, very important happening. They are learning to discriminate between sounds. They're learning to enjoy sounds, words, and it's a kind of play, actually, and I'll say more about play later, but I'll say at this point that play is very, very serious business in the child's life. Because that's where developmentally many, many things are being developed. And hearing the similarities between words, the differences between words, one of the first things the first grade teacher is going to do is start introducing sounds, and the child is supposed to be able to hear the difference between the for this, or the th of thank, for example. Or the D sound for did, or the T sound for T. You know, one's T, one's D. And some of those differences are very, very small. And sometimes the child's problem isn't that he or she forgets the symbols, but that they actually don't hear the difference between the sounds. And so you're doing your children a favor when you read some of these rhymes to them, or have them recite some of these rhymes. Or simply, while you're drying dishes or pulling weeds, or occasionally thinking of words. You don't have to say the name of the letter, but what's another word that starts with the same sound as the word dog? And give them an example. Dog and dig. Can you think of another one? If they say tank. You say, no, that's a little different. That's tank, not dank. There's a difference between dank and tank. And so, see, you can do that while you're pulling weeds. And not every time you pull weeds. But occasionally, as a parent, you ought to think about that kind of thing. And to a child, it's a game. And there isn't the pressure of school. in place. And if they can do it, well, then you don't need to do it every day. But a parent ought to know. At some time, you ought to take inventory and say, oh, when the child gets to be 4 or 5, can he actually do that? And if you check and he can, fine. If he can't, then you have some homework to do, and your first grade teacher will bless you for doing it before you send him to school. Another thing that goes with hearing is hearing the voice of the one in charge. Did your child ever say to you, but I didn't hear you? I didn't hear you. That doesn't mean the eardrums didn't vibrate. Probably when you said the name, the eardrums did vibrate. But they didn't respond. And you need to train them that when you call their name, they respond. Because when they get to school, the teacher's going to expect them. When they say the name to open the workbook, they will respond. So, out of all the noises in your life, you need to be able to hear and respond. And they really can do it. You know how your ears are attuned. If you're in a crowd out here and somebody says your name, you can pick it out, can't you? You want, who said my name? What are they saying about me? And then seeing, visual discrimination, putting puzzles together. Simple puzzles, 6-piece puzzle with an outlined background. When the child looks at a shape, looks at the hole over here, looks at a shape over here, and sees which one fits and then turns it so it fits, you can't estimate the value of that kind of activity. There's something developing, both a manipulative skill, but also a spatial recognition, and then also the kind of toy where you... We used to have a Tupperware ball with the different holes in, round, oval, and so on. So now you have a hole, you look at the hole, you look over here at all the shapes, and you pick it up and decide which one it fits, and then you're able to manipulate it so that it does go in. There are many things happening there. And some of those toys are actually very educational. Not everything that's called educational is all that educational. Some of the simplest things that are old-fashioned things, whether stringing beads or stringing popcorn, are really very skill-building and educational. And word blocks, blocks with letters on them. Understanding. Again, this can come out in conversation. One of the tests they use sometimes for preschoolers is to simply take something like a book. You give them an object, and you say, place the pen on the book. And the child should go like that, put it beside. If you say, place the pen on the book, and the child goes like that, you know there's a problem. Imagine the problem that you're going to have when you start reading and talking about stories. If a child does not understand prepositions, you might wonder, how could a child ever get to be 6 years old, and not be able to do that? I'm not sure, but it happens sometimes. And I've seen 6-year-olds who didn't know which was the warm season, you know, summer, winter, spring, fall, which was the warmer. There are some things like that it's kind of an awareness thing with your children, conversation, and you can also practice with words like slimy, and they can actually enjoy learning some of those words. This is slimy. Speaking. One of the powerful little things you can have children do is retell an experience. So Johnny goes along with Dad to the equipment dealer to get a part. And he comes back home, and later you can just ask him to tell me about what happened. And that child should be able to. Now, some children will talk nonstop. They'll tell you everything. And they should be able to. But other children, if they're speechless, you might have to draw them out. But encourage your children. Know whether or not your child is able to describe to you something that he saw happen. Or if a story was read to him, should be able to kind of tell the story back. That ability to just use words to talk about what you've seen is very, again, very foundational for learning to read. And then when you read aloud to them, thinking, sometimes talk about the story, what it was about, what the main idea was, and so forth, if they're read to. Adjusting, that's a very important one. In school, by its very nature, has a schedule, like we do here today. And bells ring. And a child has to be able to stop what he's doing and do something else. And you can't afford to sit there and wait 3 minutes until he feels like it. Some parents, well, and at home, maybe you can afford to do this. You can say, oh, you know, I'll count to 10. Or I'll tell you we're soon going to do it, and then you give you some time. But in school, you don't have that kind of time. And so they have to be able to adjust to changes in schedule, to changes. And now we get down to playing. A child, one of the most serious things a child ever does is play. Why so? I already said there are various skills developed. One of the obvious ones is what is called gross motor skills. The ability to bounce a ball, to catch, to pitch, to throw, jump rope, maybe play hopscotch, but simply to hop, to skip, to jump. Those what are called gross motor skills, it's developmentally good for the body, the agility, and it also transfers, it helps with the fine motor skills. Things like cutting or coloring, pasting, stringing beads, being able to handle fine things. Now, really young children can't do that. You develop your fine motor skills later. But the playful spirit, children should be able to play with others. A wise mother will be sure her child has, she will make an opportunity for her child to play with another child of the same age. And they have to share some toys. There's some very important things that happen when that happens. And they should be able to play without pouting or without throwing a fit or taking turns. And there are various kinds of play. There's that children normally, historically, have done naturally. There's role playing where they play doctor, they play mother, they play farm, they play fireman. And then there's cooperative play where they play together in doing something. There's also what they call parallel play where you actually don't play together, but it's more fun to do when there's somebody there with you. So you might be in the sandbox and I have my half and you have your half. And I build my bridges here and you build yours over there, but we don't really interact. That is a kind of play that they can enjoy. They should be able to enjoy playing alone. They should be able to play with a group. And so here is, but there's something very strange afoot today, and I wonder whether any of you have seen it. And I'll say in a nutshell, that some children, it seems to me that an abnormally high number of children today don't know how to play. Now, either they can have toys there or they can have free time. They either tire very quickly of what there is to do or they don't know what to do. Or if they're at school and the bell rings, they go out, well, oh, they'd rather sit and talk or have to be told what to do. Has anybody ever seen anything like that? Talk about it.
Well, we have some grandchildren that are not raised. They're not being raised in a playing church.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And they are just used to a lot of the movies.
Okay.
Because I think it's what they see mm-hmm. their parents do. Very bad.
That's
they
one.
Play, they're like our children. Mm-hmm. They don't know how to play farm, play house. Mm-hmm. And like they start that way.
Mm-hmm.
Like our 1 and 2 year old, but then you start to see the third year, little granddaughter now, she's like, doesn't hardly know what to do till she's been at our house again
mm-hmm.
a few hours, then mm-hmm. she starts playing house and trucks again.
Mm-hmm.
And their mind does not mm-hmm. last very long in play.
If there's a box of toys, they don't spontaneously get them out and start playing with them. It takes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the older they get, mm-hmm. They play less and less real play,
mm-hmm.
and they play more and more fairy play, like what they've seen on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so sad.
Yes, that alludes to what was on the other paper, and that is limit the amount of stimulation they get. That is one aspect of it. The more electronic stuff that children have, the more of this stuff they have, or even the more specialized a toy. If it's a fire truck with a light that flashes and water that squirts, there's about one thing you can do with that. You can play fire truck. But many toys you can do 20 things with. Like sometimes children, they say, have more fun with the packaging than they do with the toys. So there's something about that stimulation, that overstimulation, that really seems to squelch a development. I saw another hand. Yeah.
I raised mine a little bit, but I've just seen it in children. And my mom always told me that if you have a lot of toys that make a lot of noise and stuff and do a lot of things, that, it just, your imagination just isn't there then. Because like you said, the naturally does one thing, just push the button and make it do its thing. And I've found in, like, in my oldest son that his Legos, that he has, like, he likes backhoes and tractors so well, and he thought, we should get him a backhoe or something. But I got him some little tiny backhoes when we traveled, and he wanted to play with his Legos when we got home. Because that was his backhoe. Like, he built it. And he wanted to build one. That was how you play with backhoes. And he does so many things with them. Like, and I like to watch that. Whereas if he had a whole bunch, then he wouldn't have that imagination probably as much. But yeah.
The building toys, yes.
Yeah.
Whatever, the old Tinker Toys, Legos, Lincoln Logs, various things you stick together. There's something about that that's entirely different, where the child starts putting something together, visualizes something, and then has the satisfaction of making something, and then taking it apart and remaking it. Anybody else have any comment? School ground, playground playing at school, or activities of children? Anything you've observed or... now that we mentioned it, and you think about it, have you seen anything? I've asked people this. I teach a summer term, and teachers come from different parts of the country, and a number of them have pointed this out, that yes, some children at school, they just want to sit and talk or kind of wander around the building, and they said when they were in school, they went out, if they had a chance, they were out on the playground, a game got going, it was kickball or it was something. And two days ago, this was up in Manitoba, somebody said, it was a young mother, he might have been, I'll guess he was upper 20s, young 30s, and she said, my daughter doesn't play with dolls like I did. She said, maybe she needs to play with her more, or help her to play, but she said, my mother didn't teach me how to play either. But they seem, and several people pointed, and what really intrigued me was that the one teacher lives on a Hutterite colony, and you wouldn't think they would have changed all that much, but she said that her mother works with 2.5-year-olds in the preschool, and she said they can squabble, but as far as, and you know, there's a big difference. You can have toys available, and the atmosphere can be one of chaos and confusion, or it can be playful. And as a teacher, if you've ever supervised children, you know there's a spirit of play, and then there's a spirit of chaos, and it can shift. It can be partway through recess. They might be playing dodgeball, for example. And they have a good game of dodgeball. They're really throwing, they're jumping, but then it turns into war. And they start throwing them like bullets, and there's something about it turns malicious. And as a teacher, you need to know that and stop it. Now, and there is, it's almost like a public health issue. If children don't know how to play, you wonder about the society. And we can understand why people who try to babysit their children with DVDs or TV or electronics. You can kind of understand that. But what really intrigues me, though, is why is it that even in families where they don't have access to all this electronic stuff, we still see some of the same symptoms? And I'm not sure what it is, but I'll say that here's another thing to ask your parents or preschoolers. Do your children play? And do they know how to play? there are so many things that happen in a child's development if they play spontaneously, whether it's agility, whether it's development of the imagination, that benefit him, that you can hardly replace by things that you have them do. So parents should make sure that their children do know how to play. And some of the things you can do with them, you can teach them how to catch a ball, how to bounce a ball, how to jump a rope. And also working. Children should be able to work without being distracted. They should be able to shut out external and internal impulses. That is, there are things that happen inside that make you feel like quitting before you should. And so if you're supposed to do something for 10 minutes, shell peas or clean up or whatever, do chores, you should be able to, age appropriate, of course, should be able to work on this for a certain amount of time before you stop. Because when they get to school, there is going to be a certain amount of time. They're expected to do this or that. They should be able to follow directions. And there's enough of a task teaching children the lessons without having to try to train the will at the same time. My daughter just made a comment. She helps a bit in the first grade room at her school, and there was a new girl in first grade this year, and she just said, comment something like, whatever her name is, Susie, really doesn't enjoy, like to do what she's asked to do. Now, I think the girl is learning, but the point being that it's one thing to have a task that's a bit of a challenge if you're supposed to match this with this and connect them with a line. But it's something else if you don't want to do what you're asked to do. Now you've got two things to deal with. And that first part, the parent should have in place before they come to school. Now, on the next sheet, the specific activities, this is a continuation in a way. The one we just looked at was a list of skills children should have. Here's just a list of things parents can do, practical things they can do, that are in some ways a repeat. So read to them. And then number two there, talk with them along the way. Talk with your children along the way. Think of opportunities when you're driving down the road on the way to the store, occasionally point something out along the road. What kind of machine do you think that is behind that tractor? What do you think he's doing? Or a tree, or the trees are changing color in the fall. There are just things that are fun to talk about with children that they learn about the world around them. And you don't have to make school out of it, but some parents talk with their children, don't think about talking with their children. Of course, children ask questions at a certain age, but sometimes they don't. So engage in conversation along the way. Have them practice storytelling. Number nine, memory games. There's one specific example of a very valuable activity. And many of young children can do that better than we can. But you lay out the cards to a lake. And they're remembering the shapes that go together, and they're remembering the locations. And they can remember sometimes three or four of them. And so there's several things happening there at the same time. The spatial arrangement, likenesses and differences. And so games like that are very simple, are very, very valuable. A different kind of thing is, patterns of various kinds, stringing up beads. So if you have one string with three blacks, two red, three blacks, two red, you should be able to string up another string with three blacks, two red, three blacks, and two red. And then simple games like Simon Says. Who's familiar with Simon Says? Well, what you're requiring the person to do is to be very intent, very intent. And so the leader says, Simon says, stand up, everybody stands up. And if Simon doesn't say, you don't do it. And of course, the leader's goal is to get people out. And your goal is to stay in, but you've got to really pay attention. Why is that such a valuable game? Because it forces you to pay attention. Because if they say, Simon says, stand up, you all stand up. Simon says, touch your ear, sit down, and you sit down, you're out. Because Simon didn't say sit down. And especially for a child who has trouble following directions, or a person with inclinations to a learning disability, games like that are an excellent kind of drill. Now, if you do it too fast, you'll frustrate them. But again, some of the a major point I want to make here is that many of the things that historically children have done in their growing up years that they did for fun and play are absolutely important for development of the mind, attitudes, emotions, and body skills. And these things, in a sense, you shouldn't have to say them, but it seems that we have to sometime today. And then things like drawing, tracing, coloring, cutting things out. Some memory work. It's very valuable for children to memorize some poems, some Bible verses, some songs. And your first grade teacher will bless you if that child comes to school able to match a tune. Oh, they can match that. Or which tone's higher? Oh, oh. And you can make a game out of it. But you don't have to be teach them to sing necessarily, but at least work at it matching a tune. Now, the back of the paper, of your last paper, I don't like to cast out empty sides, so I just put something on the back side here. It's something, there's some resource material here, there's a few books, titles available. There's a set of books published by a publisher, actually in Lancaster County, that I gave you the information on that paper, and if you want to just browse through them a bit, they are, these are books, we actually get a set of these and give them to our family, each family, so that they can just look through them. They have simple ideas. The most basic book is the one that simply says what to teach your child. And things such as help your child to care for an animal, do household tasks, listen to sounds outdoors, help your child listen. Some parents just wonder, they just want ideas. That's what those books are about. As far as the learning disabilities, that's not the topic here for this workshop, but usually these children, usually all children show some of these symptoms. They tend to reverse things or forget things, but these children have really exaggerated symptoms, and if they do, there are some things you can do with them. For example, the Simon says that I pointed out, you might really have to work on something like that to help these children to pay attention, to focus on the memory games. All right, I think our time is up, and you're welcome to share these ideas with parents. These are ideas I collected. They're not original with me. They're not copyrighted or anything. If you want another handout to take along, you're welcome to it. I do have a copy of that one book along that's on your list called Turning the Hearts of the Children. It's more on child training. So, enjoy your children. And if parents wonder, what can I do? The school should be in a position to give them a list somehow. So here are some things to do. And these things are, if these things aren't in place, the first grade teacher's hands are almost tied if these things aren't ready. Any comments?
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit the docforlearning.org.